John Pilger is an embedded journalist in one sense only. He is embedded in the pursuit and the relaying of accurate information on one of the most vital issues we face, the making of war. From Vietnam and Cambodia to Indonesia and Timor to Iraq and Palestine, his journalism and his documentary filmmaking have been indispensable for an understanding of the motives of the war makers and the horrors wreaked upon their victims. John Pilger also is concerned with the growing repression of democratic rights inside the homelands of the very governments that pursue foreign wars under the banner of defending democracy. It is to discuss this war on the home front that we've contacted John Pilger in London, England. Good evening, John, and welcome back to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good evening.
Tony Blair has just introduced what I think is the fourth anti-terrorism bill in the last 5 years. How far is he prepared to go in suppressing democratic rights in the United Kingdom?
I think he's prepared to go as far as he's allowed to go. All of the measures that he's put forward, the Home Secretary put forward, are demonstrably unnecessary. There are already incitement laws in this country, as there are in most countries. He's gone beyond that. We have a proposed law about glorifying terrorism, which means that if you, in effect, say that you support the legitimate right, what is the legitimate right of a resistance to seek to get rid of an occupying force in your country, that could be construed as illegal and could land you in prison for up to 7 years. That's the proposal. The truth is that most of this just won't get past the courts here, and there is a very interesting tension now, almost a confrontation in many ways, between the highest judiciary in this country and the Blair government.
Two of the High Court justices, the preceding chair of the Privy Council, the law lord, reprimanded Blair, and the current one said that there seems to be some politician who is threatening the court. So this is, I guess, symptoms of what you're saying, a conflict between judiciary and executive.
Yes, it is. This is unprecedented, I think, where very senior judges, the senior law lord, you know, the law lords in Britain are the senior judiciary, the highest court. The former senior law lord has been giving media interviews saying the judges won't be intimidated. They have a role to play in a democracy, and that is to interpret proper laws. Last December, one of the law lords, Lord Hoffman, said that Blair's measures then, this was before the latest crop, were actually more dangerous than terrorism itself. So there's a bit of a scrap coming up, and that's good. It's not good that a society has to then fall back, of course, on its establishment judges, but that's what this society is having to do.
Someone in a commentary I read, I don't remember the author, wrote that the absolutism once claimed by monarchy is now championed by New Labour. And I believe they were referring, you know, to the period of the Magna Carta or the period of the, of course, the Cromwellian period.
Yeah.
You've written what you call the rise of the democratic police state. Can you explain those combination of words, democratic police state?
Well, it's possible, and I think that's what we're getting. You can have all the trappings of democracy. In fact, for large numbers of people in a certain compartment of the democracy can have all the freedom they want, really, as long as they shut up and keep their heads down. When you have people who are the dissenters in a society, find themselves up against the plethora of laws and regulations and rules that effectively prescribe them, that prevent them from going about their lawful affairs of dissenting, as it should be in a democracy. When you have the police having powers that, as Blair proposes here, that they are allowed to lock people away without charge for up to 3 months, or in fact with some, that's for anybody, and with people from abroad who are suspected, only suspected, of so-called terrorism offences, they're allowed to place them under house arrest indefinitely. Then that's the end of habeas corpus. Habeas corpus, of course, came right back from a long time ago and grew out of the Magna Carta. That's really the end of true democracy and the rise of the police state. So, in other words, you have the trappings of democracy, but you don't really have it. So you can have both, but in fact, as we know, once you allow a police state to evolve, it will, in the end, consume real democracy. And dissent, of course, is the cutting edge of real democracy. That's how you measure it. If you don't have real dissent, then you have a democracy in name only.
Are we better off using words like police state instead of fascism, because fascism is, in the popular imagination, reduced to strutting, ranting, armband, waving, yeah, saluting, etc.?
Well, I think the problem is that there are so many powerful images and precedents that dominate the way we see the world. That's a product of all those terrible one-dimensional years of the Cold War, good and evil. And sort of good and evil has sort of come back. Not quite, because most people don't believe it. But Bush and Blair and their like would like it to come back. And in the past, we've really used, I think overused, the example of Nazi Germany, and it's with which Nazi, that's where we draw our, if you like, our model of fascism from. Now, fascism, of course, is Mussolini. Fascism comes from Italy originally, of course. Mussolini said it was the combination of corporatism and the state. Well, we have that now, but I don't believe we have fascism as it developed in Italy, and certainly we don't have it as it developed in Germany. I think we have something rather more insidious, but just as dangerous.
Empire building abroad and suppression of democratic rights at home are so much of the same process today, but do you think the connection is they invariably go together, that the old saying is true, that a country that oppresses another country cannot be free in itself?
Not in the end. Can keep it up for a while, but in the end it can't. And that's certainly what happened in the ancient empires. It certainly happened in Rome after Caesar popped across the Rubicon. It can't happen, and I think we're now observing an American empire in decline in many areas. Not in decline in terms of its overall power, because it is so powerful, but in a number of areas it is certainly in decline, and the democracy that was the version of democracy, although I always felt personally it was a plutocracy in America, but the democracy that they call that is certainly in decline. I mean, they've emasculated the Bill of Rights. They've made it a very fearful society. There is effectively no opposition. It's a single ideology state. there is dissent here and there, as I say, the measure of democracy, but not at an institutional level. The Supreme Court is thoroughly corrupted. So it's come home, and the United States has been running this empire now for a long time. We weren't allowed to call it an empire until recently. Well, those of us who did call it empire accused of using agitprop. Well, now everybody understands that it is an empire, and we have imperialism, and it's come home. It's affecting the citizens of the empire themselves.
You mentioned fear and the frightening of a population as being a very central part of this process of the so-called war on terror. How in Britain is that fear being manufactured by the government, and what kind of an impact is it having on the population, particularly on the Muslim population in England?
Well, that's where the fear is concentrated. Generally speaking, I don't think there is. There's a sense of insecurity, people wondering what on earth is going on. But it's not like the United States. This is a more sophisticated society in many ways. And so fear is not universal here at all. But it is in the Muslim communities. It is at street level, where they find a police presence or police intervention in many forms, police vehicles videotaping people in the street, police raids on Muslim bookshops, people being stopped and searched under all sorts of laws that no one knew really existed before and now are being used against them. The people are very frightened and very worried. You know, Muslim peace people have been associated in the public mind, thanks to the Blair government and to the echo of the Blair government in the media, been associated with terrorism. So they're being scapegoated. I have to say that although they are being scapegoated at that level, I don't believe most people in this country regard them as the kind of enemy within, to quote Margaret Thatcher of some years ago, at all. I think this, generally speaking, people in Britain have developed, really, in spite of their politicians and media and all those who would provoke them otherwise, I think they have remained tolerant.
Well, that optimistic note, well, thank you for taking time this evening to speak with us, John.
You're very welcome.
That was John Pilger, journalist, documentary filmmaker, and author. And his most recent book, which is available in paperback this month, is Tell Me No Lies, Investigative Journalism and Its Triumphs.